Satellite Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with them.
Can you believe it? It's Sunday night again.
It's about time.
How about it? It's like you almost had a timer set or something like that.
I'm always here. It's like on autopilot in my car. I was earlier today in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Yeah?
And then all of a sudden, I just felt like the aroma in those old cartoons.
Yeah.
Where it just kind of pulls you along. Next thing I know, I'm in Wheeling, Illinois at the Papa Whiskey Kilo Airport. How rocky to those of us that know and love it.
Yeah, and you're broadcasting live.
As always.
Absolutely. Well, it's 8 o'clock at night, Chicago time. We're at the Palwaukee Airport, KPWK Radio.
KPWK Radio.
I'm Al Waterloo.
Actually, Chicago Executive Airport.
Oh, true.
Let's
yeah.
Be honest and nice to these folks.
I need to get better reading glasses and read the sign out front a little bit better. But anyway, I'm Al Waterloo, and it's Simple Flight Radio. How about it?
It's about time. Like I said, it was a great week with Thanksgiving and all, but I'm really excited that we're back in our home studio after last week, where you all of a sudden informed me about 3 hours before the show that you were heading off to the East Coast or somewhere out there.
Yeah, I know. That was kind of a quick little a quick jaunt, and we recovered nicely and used technology to its fullest.
I love it.
It's like Simple Flight Radio is like the post office. It's rain, shine, sleet, hail, or in remote locations.
When's the last time you used the post office?
Actually, the other day.
Oh, okay. I guess we're at that time of year.
Yeah. Right. Well, so, yeah. Well, actually, it was hours ago. So, yeah. It's very valuable.
Actually, I had to send something, and probably the first time in a year that I've used the post office where I've actually gone in. Certainly, I've mailed letters, but it's really the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah. Well, that's good. But anyway, yeah, 'tis the season. Hopefully a lot of post office. You keep pointing.
I'm looking at the, someone is out in the ramp with two dogs asking their dogs to do the business before they get on the airplane.
Yeah.
Where's the video?
There goes your aviation AD. It's flaring like the hormones of an 18-year-old boy. That's awesome.
I just wasn't expecting. I come to the airport to see airplanes, not two dogs relieving themselves on the ramp.
Yeah, somehow I should get a picture of this. I don't know, but yeah, that's a riot. Anyway, that shows that if you come here and visit us during the show, you can see some phenomenal stuff, not just airplanes, but aviation moments, just like that.
Absolutely. I guess we could call that an aviation moment.
Yeah. Anyway, did you say hello to everybody?
Hello, everybody. This is Mark Heppner.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. I forgot. I thought you introduced me.
Oh, I don't. Maybe I did. Maybe my aviation ADD is all over the place.
I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Did you have a good one?
I did. You know what? It was wonderful. I grossly overate, which would throw an airplane out of its gross weight. But you know what? I recovered nicely with a good nap.
The nap reduces calories?
I don't know, but it felt good.
I'll go with that.
Actually, how was yours?
It was great. I spent it with family. Unfortunately, as I had to admit last week, I could not fly because of the lack of availability of airplanes across my trip, which was in Iowa.
Yeah.
But I got to be with family. My youngest son came up from Kansas City. My oldest lives in Cedar Rapids and got to spend time with the granddaughter. And daughter-in-law, son, family. It was great. And I didn't overeat, although today I happened to put down a bag of candy corn driving home.
Yeah, and you're, you know, I'm going to let in one of Mark's little secrets.
Uh-oh.
Every time before the show starts, he gets a bag of animal crackers that we're about ready to. Oh, these are for you and I.
I threw them
and yeah, how many did I have? None. And then you have, you know, they just disappear.
But I did say that if you wanted some, I'd go buy some more. I mean, that vending machine, I know it. Just go to D9, 85 cents and D9, and I'm going to get my animal crackers.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Excellent. Well, I'm glad you got your animal crackers. Hopefully, got some Black Friday deals and upcoming Sunday, Monday, or Cyber Monday.
And, well, actually, in Iowa, they do a small store Saturday, and they ask you to be a patron of your local small stores that can't compete with the big box. But I have to admit, and for those listening that may come into our little clubhouse of the Leading Edge Flying Club that you and I belong to, here I was in Iowa. I could not participate in Black Friday.
Right.
So I went over to the local Walmart, and they had this deal. If you were in line between 10 p.m. and 11 p.m.,
yeah,
you were guaranteed to get the item for that line. And they had a couple, and the one I picked was a 32-inch TV for $149. So I got
Holy
it for
cow.
The clubhouse.
That's perfect.
I'm going to put it in the clubhouse, and we get rid of those old tube TVs or whatever they are in there, and be able to watch videos in
high
def.
Like the 21st century, finally.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe
we're
it.
We're only 11 years behind.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, that's good. I'm glad you had a great holiday. Hopefully you have a great Cyber Monday tomorrow and all that. But I wish they had Cyber Mondays for airplanes, you know, where massive online discounts for aviation product. Well, the more specifically airplanes.
Yeah, I wish they had it for anything. I mean, we all know that anything that says aviation is going to be expensive, but...
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, shave 500 grand off of a jet. Why not?
That's right.
Buy it online. Yeah. I'd wake up early. That'd be the, you know, that would get me out of bed early. You know,
Boeing business jet.
Absolutely. But, so, I'm glad you brought up the word Boeing.
Okay.
Because one of my favorite airports to fly into is Boeing Field.
I've never had the pleasure.
Oh, my goodness. It's absolutely fantastic. They have it's a couple miles south of, north of the SeaTac Airport out in Seattle. And it's rich with history. It's a beautiful approach. It's kind of like the Palwaukee of Seattle.
Okay,
right.
I'll have to take your word for it, but I'm going to hold you there. I'll write it down.
Yeah,
I'm going out there, and I better have that.
Yeah, it's definitely on my top 10 favorite airports in the country, and I was always jealous about the weather that they had out there. You want to figure out what's happening there?
Well, isn't it always raining out there?
You know what? Every time I've ever been out there, it's been beautiful. I mean, they had occasional mist and things like that, but it's been wonderful.
Well, I would like to know what it is right now. Can you help me out with that?
Absolutely. Let's dial up. Let's see what's going on at Boeing Field right now.
It's your papa.
Wow. Papa.
Something popped my eardrums.
Yeah.
Let's go. Jet information, Papa. 0153 Zulu weather. Wind 320 at 3, visibility 10. Clear.
Clear.
Temperature 6, dew point 2, altimeter 3028.
Wow.
ILS runway 31 left, approaching use, landing runways 31. Notice airman caution for cranes west of the tower, 180 feet below.
Shocks.
Yeah. Advise on initial contact, yeah, Papa.
Papa.
Papa! It does sound like a bad evening out there.
No.
10 and clear.
Well, you know what? It's
proved you wrong.
It is translated to or transferred to winter here. I was in Iowa, I got tickets to be on the field for the Iowa Hawkeyes' 8th loss.
Very nice.
Yeah, well, I don't know about the loss part, but it's fun to be on
I
the
think
field.
It's great.
My son covers it for the TV station he works for. And I froze. I mean, it was so windy. The wind chill had to be below zero, and it was just nuts. I mean, it was nice to be with the boys, but at the same time, it was really nice to when that game was over.
Yeah. Well, that's not bad. I'm glad that it's over because it's a loss for Iowa in the books, and that only helps out Illinois.
Yeah, what did the line I do?
They lost as well. So.
I think they lost by about 30-40 points, if I'm not mistaken, to Northwestern. So
well,
don't go there.
That's all right. It doesn't matter. They, you know, Iowa still lost, which is fine.
I'm glad you're a happy man.
Doesn't take much. But anyway, so that's. Did you do anything cool in aviation this week at all?
I didn't, This is what I did. As I told you here, I was expecting to fly to Iowa. I couldn't. So what I did was the next best thing. Since my son just moved from Iowa City to Cedar Rapids, I was looking for a new airport.
Very nice.
Because Iowa City's always been my favorite airport. And just east of, or in the northeast corner of Cedar Rapids, is Marion, Iowa. And
yeah.
Charlie 17 is the airport. And I drove out there. And it's a cute little airport. You know, they don't have an instrument approach, but I met Jan, the owner of the place, and she was very accommodating and said next time I come to town, I should fly in.
Yeah.
Free ramp, and if I happen to need an indoor place, if they got it, it's only $10 a night, so it sounded nice. It's a little narrow, but like only 15 minutes from my son's house, so I'm going to take her up on that. Maybe even in a couple weeks I'll be up there again.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a small aviation victory. Well, that's a big one, actually.
Yeah. What about you? What did you do this week?
Well, I made up, I guess if you didn't fly, I made up for some of your flying this week. And so one of my favorite flights this whole week was with my coworker, Travis. He's been on the show, Mr. the other half of Simple Flight, or third of Simple Flight, I guess. And we heard him talk to us last night during the hangar talk. But we flew from Doylestown, Pennsylvania to Teterboro.
Wow. You know what? I'd like to go to Teterboro, and I know I'm probably in the minority in people who haven't been there, but...
Hey, no. Well,
it's an exciting environment, isn't it?
It's a very exciting environment. It's busy. You think Palwaukee's busy. You know, crank up the volume 10 notches, and holy cow, you've got Teterboro. And so anyway, we flew in there. But the best part was, is this flight was at night. We flew at I think the highest we got was 4,000 feet. I mean, we were in the air for about 25 minutes. And New York approach took us right over the top, or pretty close to the top of Newark Airport, right down the skyline of Manhattan.
Wow.
And got to shoot the ILS to runway 6. And it was absolutely crystal clear.
Did you take any video? Put on Spark Reel or anything?
No, I didn't.
I guess you were kind of...
I was just enjoying it.
Well, you were in a sterile cockpit, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Below 10,000 feet.
That's right.
But anyway, but the cool thing was, is that... So we drop our passengers off. They have dinner. We come back, and the flight back was just as beautiful. Night, and this is crystal clear. And the next day, our passenger said, "Hey, wasn't that a nice flight to New York and back?"
Oh, that's nice when your passengers say that. That's
yeah,
they saw it too.
And they said, "You know what? That view was just incredible, wasn't it?" And we're like, "Yeah, you should have seen it from the front." And they're like, "Oh man, I bet it was nice."
I'm jealous now. We'll have to do that.
Yeah,
in the Sky Arrow.
Absolutely, absolutely. But that was probably my most memorable. But I did some flight instruction, had a couple breakthrough lessons with some students.
Excellent. And that's okay. How appropriate with our show tonight, talking about flight training and breakthroughs.
Absolutely. And then we, what else did I? Oh, I had a fun little lunch flight today. We flew from Palwaukee over to Schaumburg, and we ended up taking the Sky Arrow. So it was, 10-minute flight over there, but we're in the Sky Air, buzzing low. A friend that's Sam Scales.
He was on the show before.
Yeah, he was on the show before, and he was on Thanksgiving break, so we caught up for lunch and flew over to Schaumburg.
That's
awesome.
Great. Did you ever find those free meal things I gave you?
No.
I had a bunch of cards. I gave them to you, and now it's just driving me nuts that they're sitting somewhere and probably in the bottom of your washing machine.
Yeah, that's all right.
You could be buying you lunch.
All disintegrated and whatnot, but that's okay. There was a so for those of you out there, if you go to the Schaumburg Airport in Chicago,
06 Charlie.
06 Charlie. If you don't know where that is, pull out your four flight or your JEP chart and look that up. And then Pilot Pete's. Might I recommend the pot roast? It's delicious every single day.
Hey, I like the turbulence chop salad when I go there.
The turbulence chop
salad?
Yeah, is that what it's called?
It is. It's a great salad. It really is.
Wow. So we talked about maybe what happened this week, but you being a history buff, you know, you DVR the History Channel all the time.
Yeah, that or YouTube.
Yeah, or YouTube.
One of the two, I forget which.
Right. Did anything cool happen in aviation on November 25th since the beginning of time?
Yeah, well, let's just go back to 1940, day in 1940, and the de Havilland Mosquito made its first flight on this day in 1940.
Are you serious?
I am serious.
I like that. The de Havilland Mosquito.
So now the question is, are you going to top me and go back further than 1940?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, why would you start now?
No, because I think moving forward is like the time, you know, jets and stuff like that, you know, later in history and all that. But I'm going to join you right there in 1940.
Wow, I already did that date.
Yeah, well, I'm doing it too.
Tell me more.
The Martin B-26 bomber made its first flight.
So two airplanes made its first flight same day, same year.
Yeah, it was like it was a race or something like that.
It's like Boeing and Airbus, who can get their model out first, right?
Absolutely.
And grab all the orders at the Paris Air Show.
Right, but I'm guessing that the de Havilland Mosquito is not a bomber.
But it's a stinger.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I don't know. There was a joke coming
up. A biter?
A biter. That's it.
And then you start itching after it? I don't know, I guess. Yeah, but anyway, that's pretty, those are pretty cool airplanes. Have you ever seen a B-26 up close?
I have not. Have you?
I think it's Oshkosh on and off, but
actually, you know what? I might have as well. Now that you say that, at least it sounds familiar. I'd have to see a picture and confirm.
Yeah, excellent. Hey, we just got a picture from our guest, and I'm gonna spoiler alert. John Fiscus from the Flight Academy is going to be coming on here shortly, but he just sent us a picture. He's sitting in Seattle right now, and he said, "Here's some more proof that the sun shines in Seattle." He took this today at 11 a.m., and it's a beautiful shot of kind of on a rooftop of the downtown skyline, the Space Needle and all that.
Oh, my God. Can I bend around here and see it?
Yeah, I'll put it up here on the big screen for you. Look at that.
Wow.
Look at that.
That is a beautiful shot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whoa.
But one of the cool things is that I had a when I was out on a Seattle overnight, I ended up getting a great photo of the Boeing 787 on final approach into Boeing Field with a backdrop of the Space Needle. It was really cool.
You have a picture of that?
Yeah, it was still in experimental phase. Let me see if I can pull that up. That'd be a good thing.
Well, you can put it out in the site.
Yeah, I'll put it up on the site. But that was one of my favorites.
Are we going to do a Sunday Night Chuckle today?
Yeah.
What happened to that? I just realized. Usually that's like at 8:02.
Yeah, that's on you to make us laugh.
Yeah, well, so we're a little bit behind. Now you've got my timing all messed up.
That's all right.
Well, while you look at that picture, I just...
So do the airlines. They have everybody's time.
Yeah, well, let's go with the airlines, right? And so a major airline, I'm going to keep the airline out of it, but it was a major airline. They built this new workout facility for their flight crews.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard about it, but it was complete. It had, you know, the gym, the weights and all that, and even had a set of showers. I mean, it was a beautiful facility trying to get people to be more healthy and all that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it was a mistake or anything, but the showers, they built the wall between the showers and the lockers, but it was like the upper half. So you could only see the lower half of bodies.
No right? kidding.
Yeah, so you couldn't see it. And on in this particular occasion, these three flight attendants, female flight attendants,
yeah,
they walked into the shower thinking it was the female side, and obviously when they looked over and there was a gentleman there, they could see the lower half coming out of the shower. Obviously it was not the female side. And all of these female flight attendants just so happened they were married to pilots. And it was kind of funny because they kind of held back the gasp and they kind of studied the environment, if you will. And finally, one of the flight attendants broke the silence saying to the others, "Well, he's not my husband." And then the next flight attendant kind of studied a little bit further and she looked at the other two and said, "He's not my husband either." And then the third flight attendant spent the most time, and after a while, she just looked and she goes, "Heck, he doesn't even work for the airline."
No. Yeah.
Where's my sound effect?
Perfect. Okay. I like it. That's a good one.
I made you smile.
You did. You always do.
Hopefully I made our audience smile as well.
I'm sure you did. I mean, you always do, and that's... Your props on you. Apparently, I've been officially booed off the stage by listeners and feedback of, yeah, my jokes are never great. And
but you give it the old college try, but it is University of Illinois after all.
I think people get more laugh about me giving it the old college try and not, you know, having
it. I do. It makes me laugh.
Yeah, right. Well, anyway, we got a really awesome show coming up.
Yes, well, we do. I'm excited. It goes back to what we talked about probably in August. Maybe it was our first week in August that we talked about what's wrong with aviation and what's right with aviation, because
right.
we discovered there was really nothing wrong with aviation, that there's plenty of opportunities. And one of the things that you and I keep coming back to is on the instructor side and training side.
Yeah.
Whether we feel there's so much opportunity, and generally speaking, although I'm starting to hear things improve, at least in the Chicagoland area, we're hearing training is down.
Yeah.
You know, and what's wrong with training, and customer service isn't where it is. And so obviously we've got a guest coming on tonight that I think has some exciting things to talk about, what's going on in the industry and how things are getting better.
Absolutely. And I think the big point is that, you know, there is nothing wrong with aviation. We're all in it for the love and the joy of it, and it that still exists. And, you know, part of it is there's a training aspect of why and that's usually the first part, you know, why people get in, and, you know, is that they have to train to become pilots. And there's so many different horrible training experiences out there, and you know, John and the rest of his team are really trying to clean that up and have fun with it, and, you know, deliver high quality product.
Yeah, well, having fun. I don't want to characterize an industry by the examples of a few, but it seems like a lot of people that I've become in contact with aren't having fun anymore.
You know, right.
On the instructor side. And I don't know if it's because they're looking forward to being somewhere else, i.e. the airlines or a corporate job.
Yeah.
Or somehow it's just not living up to their expectations of what they hoped.
Right.
And again, that's not the entire industry, but I do have some data points that would suggest that's more prevalent than it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. But how about we get John from the Flight Academy on the line?
All right.
And see what he has to say. Hopefully he's got some more pictures of Seattle. And just a little, I think that's great that he posted that. The true beauty of Seattle. What's going on over there?
Okay, I think we're
okay.
Yeah. Sounds like we're ringing him up.
There it is.
Hey, John. It's Mark and Al.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good. Excellent. Nice picture, by the way.
Yeah, I heard you guys talking about it, and Boeing Field is my home airport, so I can support everything you said about it. If you ever get a chance to fly in there on a sunny day, which we have many of, and I gave you some proof of that.
Yes.
The runways point directly at Mount Rainier, which is a 14,400-foot tall mountain peak out to the southeast of Seattle. It's a glacier on the top, and it's just it's a stunning arrival. I've got a bunch of pictures of it. I'll send you some more later.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
That's awesome.
Beautiful airport and one of my favorite cities. So,
great. Anyway. So joining us live for our listeners today is John Fiskus of the Flight Academy out in Seattle, and specifically at Boeing Field.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what? The first time I want to touch on something about Mount Rainier from an aviator standpoint. I remember the first time I saw Mount Rainier flying. I was flying.
You saw the mountain flying?
Yeah. Yeah, it sprouted its wings and, you know, was out there flying a glacier 7
arrival. It just sounded funny. Excuse me, I've been driving all day.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, but it was kind of cool because we were flying from Denver to Seattle for the airline. And, you know, I remember the captain saying, oh, hey, there's Mount Rainier. And I look up, and here's this huge mountain.
It's beautiful. Absolutely.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. And it's every time I laid eyes on it, it kind of took my breath away. It's just that boom, you know. I don't know, there's something really cool about it. I don't know if you still get that, John, seeing it every day, but, you know, I'm sure the first time you saw it from the air, that was like, it's huge, isn't it?
You never get over it. And I travel a lot teaching. You know, I don't just teach in Seattle, I teach all over, and sometimes it gets a little long on the road, and every time I see it, even if it's just peeking out the top of the mountains or something like that, it's always a it's iconic. It's welcoming me home just as much as the Space Needle would be for Seattle, and it's absolutely stunning view too. It kind of stands out there by itself. So I take it's one of the canned routes, as if I've got a friend in town and I want to show him a good time and put a good impression of Seattle on them, I take them up for a lap around Mount Rainier.
Yeah.
I hope to become your good friend because I want to take that lap.
Yeah, that's awesome. That sounds great.
You know, do you have any landmarks, Al, of things that make you feel like your home that you see from there?
You know what? There was actually, this was out in Washington, D.C., believe it or not. Even though it wasn't my hometown, it was my home airport. And anytime, you would always really approach Washington, D.C. from kind of the west. You'd fly on the common arrival into D.C. was the LD arrival. And when you got switched over to approach, I think it was 118.67. And I don't know, the Potomac approach controllers had the most happy, cheery voices. They were really chilled and laid back. And it was just so nice to kind of watch dusk fall upon D.C., fly the River Visual Approach, and talk to those guys.
Cool.
It was really cool.
Yeah, coming in from the west is when I normally come in. It's silly, but the Byron Nuclear Power Plant. That's what my wife would call. Oh, I see that. We're close to home. So that's our landmark. We see the.
You need to find a better landmark.
Yeah, well, I wish we had a mountain in Chicago.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, we got a wonderful skyline, a big lake.
From the east, you can't beat it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But from the west, you have to deal with the nuclear power plant.
Yeah, right. But anyway, John, back to you. What you want to just kind of fill in, give us a quick little background about yourself and kind of introduce what you're doing with flight instruction. I think that'd be a lot of fun to hear.
It's a good place to start as any. Yeah. Well, I went to school in North Dakota at a school that's fairly well known there. After that, I took a brief stint of instructing at an FBO and then got hired by the company that contracted to what is now Cirrus Aircraft. At the time it was Cirrus Design, so I'll just call it Cirrus and keep it easy. And I taught the new owners of their aircraft. That was my primary job. When they bought the airplane, Cirrus gave them a standard two days at the time, and now it's 3 days of training. And so that was my job there. I worked there for about 2 years, and then another fellow and I, his name is Luke Lyson, and I started this company, and we said we were just going to specialize in Cirrus airplanes because we had so many people who had purchased them, and they loved their instructor back home, but the instructor just didn't know enough about that particular aircraft. You know, we've got GPS and autopilots and moving map, multifunction displays, you know, all kinds of stuff in there. And they wanted to really get an in-depth training. They were kind of drinking from the fire hose when they came to the factory. So, we ended up as employees at the Duluth plant there getting sent out to train, people, recurrent training, even did some, instrument training and private training and that sort of thing. And so we thought, you know, we could do that. So we started our own company, and that was 10 years ago, August. And to this day, we still brand ourselves exclusively Cirrus. So,
and yeah. With the statement you made about it was so different and they were drinking from the fire hose, here we are 10 years later, and there's Cirrus everywhere. Do you still feel the exact same need today?
The need for specialized instruction, you mean?
Yeah, you said that people with the new GPS, what we now call the TAA aircraft, you know, you were kind of on the forefront of teaching that, yet now it seems kind of commonplace with the Perspective or the G1000, whatever, even the older Cirrus with the Avidyne platform. Is it that which makes you in demand, or is it something else that has now morphed, if you will, 10 years later into where the value is for your customers?
Right. Well, it's not my looks, I could tell you that. But it has not changed the need for that kind of specialized instruction. In fact, it's increased significantly for all the kind of reasons that you just cited. It takes a fair amount of time in these airplanes, not just to know how the systems work, because that's really only step one. You have to then know how the systems don't work. I get calls all the time from clients asking, you know, why didn't it do X, Y, or Z, the thing they expected it to do? And so, you know, I have to tell them that, you know, this is the limitation. It was looking for this and you didn't quite give it to you, or ATC didn't quite do what the system needed, in which case you have to ask them for it. And then it even gets further beyond that. We talk about failure modes. A lot of these aircraft have ways that the system will compensate for the loss of a part of itself. And sometimes that's not all that evident. So really the need for specialized instruction is increasing. Cirrus has backed that. They've got a designation where they can say that they've trained an instructor to their standardized program, a Cirrus standardized instructor. And I think just the fact that we've still got our company here 10 years later says that it's still going, and we've slowly but surely grown ourselves over the last 10 years. And so, yeah, it's definitely still out there.
And you said grown, so, and also mentioned a couple times beyond just the Seattle area. Where are you located?
Well, we've got instructors based in here in Seattle and in Las Vegas, Nevada, but we teach all over the world. We travel to our clients probably 70% of the time, I would estimate. Very relatively little of our training actually happens where we sleep in our own beds at night. So it's usually in a hotel. I was just in Australia in September and was there for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And then the year before, about a month ago, last year, so October of last year, I flew a plane from London to Budapest in Hungary, and
oh,
I was
goodness.
There for a couple weeks teaching there. So, you know, the specialized instruction need is all over, and even outside the U.S. So there's plenty to do.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. You know, and
sounds tiring.
Well, it sounds tiring, but
Andy.
You know what? That's just like with anything. You know, aviation does get tiring at points. But I mean, you have to be having a riot to be traveling all over the world and training people on a very cool airplane.
Oh yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. I get asked on occasion whether or not I'm interested on moving on to something else. I'm not going to say move up to something else because I'm not sure it's a vertical like a jet or an airline or something. no offense, but to our airline friends, that was kind of a dig at Joe Nemec, who just texted me not to screw up, so I appreciate that. He'll be listening later, but in any case, no, this is a super cool job. It's a really fun airplane to fly. It's very, very capable, and you know, you get to go around and do stuff. And the thing that I find is when you're teaching, you know, our specialized side of our business is in instruction, though we do a few other things, but if you're having a good time as the instructor, you know, and enjoying what you're seeing and doing, your client, whoever's sitting next to you in the left seat, they're gonna feel that, they're gonna know that, and that's gonna go a long way towards helping them have a good time, which is really what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really, to hit on the point that you said, is to really help them have a good time. And I think that's such a huge, important issue in flight training now, is that, well, one, the student's the paying customer, right? And if they're not having a good time, you know,
they won't be paying very long.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's...
Well, yeah, then there's sometimes fear of that pay thing. This is something that I've noticed when I've hired new instructors to work with us, is they're very aware of the, and this is maybe jumping ahead for our the $100,000 question that Al and I bat back and forth, but, you know, if some instructors get very concerned over an extra 0.1 or 0.2 on the Hobbs, but you know, if the person you're working with is having a good time and an extra 20, 30 minutes in the flight would allow them to see or do something that's really cool, that's what they're there for. That's what they're paying you for. And better that than just motor out to the training area, do the three stalls, and then motor back in for four landings and be done with it.
So when
you gotta have a good time.
So when you say the extra 0.1 or 0.2, does that mean it's like on a fixed fee and that there's no compensation after that, or why did you mention the extra 0.1 or 0.2?
Oh, No, a lot of my new hires are very concerned about the money that their client is spending.
Oh.
And so they're saying like, you know, we've got to get back. You know, I don't want to spend any, you know, if we can make this less than 1.4, then they'll be happier with me because they're going to end up paying less money, as opposed to 1.6 on the Hobbs or 1.8 on the Hobbs or whatever, you know, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Interesting.
So,
I'd like to throw out the thought or the statement of that, hey, you know, the student actually wants to pay, you know, experience, you know, if you could deliver a good experience in that, you know, extra 0.3 or 0.4, you know, that's worth the entire, you know, value of the lesson right there.
Yeah, and it may make the lesson stick even better because you have a good, there's the psychology side of it that we could dive into. But, I mean, ultimately, that's what people do this for. We fly because we like it, not because we're trying to, well, at least not everybody's trying to earn a living at it. Some of us are, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't have a good time with that too. So it's really, there's so much room for enjoyment in aviation. It's kind of a shame if you eclipse that in favor of saving $15 or $20 or $100.
Yeah, right.
Well, and the thing that Al and I constantly talk about, it's not how much they pay and what they get in return in terms of a lesson sticking, it's value. And I know when I'm out with an instructor, it's like the amount I pay just really isn't that important if I get at least that much in value.
Yeah.
And we all want to get better, we want to be safer, and we want to be able to utilize, as Al says, we want to fly the license
yeah.
we earned.
Oh, absolutely. You know, an instrument rating gives you the ability to fly to 200.5, and a lot of people are afraid to do that, but hey, you know what? It's an instructor's job, in my opinion, you know, to help generate that feeling to be able to fly to the capability of what your license entitles you to. Yeah. So, no, I think that's really good.
So a little bit more foundational questions, John. What is the type of training? I've been out to your website. It's a great website. And I saw things like private and instrument, and you have some special things. Do you do commercial? Do you do multi? Obviously, with Cirrus, I guess you probably don't do multi, but what kind of training do you offer?
Yeah, no, it's very Cirrus-centric, so that kind of eclipses the multi-engine side of things a bit. But, you know, we'll talk about that someday, hopefully, if Cirrus ever makes a twin. But meanwhile, we do a lot of transition training. So when somebody buys a used aircraft, they're not buying it from the factory, so they need to get trained in how that aircraft works. So we go out and work with them. I just did that in Central Washington about a week ago. Spent 3 days with the fellow and got him up to speed on his plane. We also do instrument training, as you mentioned, and private pilot training. We'll train somebody from zero time in their Cirrus, and have done, you know, over, you know, well over 100 private licenses and Cirruses over the last decade. It's probably well beyond that, but the numbers are not off the top of my head. And we do about twice as many instrument ratings.
Wow.
We've done a few commercials, but we usually have to seek out something else and cheat a little bit on the Cirruses to do that, because we need something with gear that moves.
Of course.
And then we do, you know, we do a few things that are a little bit outside instruction. We ferry aircraft all over the world, so if somebody buys one in Australia or China or England, you know, we'll take it to them. And then we do some guided trips. We do a fishing tour of Alaska.
Wow.
We put an instructor in every plane on that trip, so it's educational, but it's also fun, and you don't have to stress out about the fact that you're flying in Alaska. So
it sounds like Al's trip down to Gaston's.
Yeah.
A little fishing, a lot of fun, and make an airplane trip out of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's there for. I mean, it opens up the world to you to have that kind of ability to travel that quickly. And there's so many airports all over the country and outside of it, too. You know, Canada, Mexico, the Bahamas, and those are just the nearby places. You can go all over the place and very rapidly and very easily in a plane. And yeah, that's one of the great things about it.
Very cool. Hey, one of our listeners just tweeted in and asked how many CFIs you employ and other types of employees that may work for your organization.
Right now we've got 7 instructors total, and one person who does the administrative stuff, and that's about it. We're not an FBO, so we don't do fueling or maintenance or anything like that. It's just straight up flying.
Stick to your knitting. We like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I remember when we first started talking, John, you and I, you mentioned that you had an instructor that was starting to do their own scholarship fund, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that I thought that was pretty neat. And I guess this kind of ties into, the profession that a flight instructor can legitimately have. And it's not very far out of reach. But if you have the instructor that works for you, I think you said that she started making, a decent amount of, or a decent wage and, a livable wage, and, had some extra funds and thought, hey, this is a great opportunity to give back and start a scholarship.
Yeah, no, we always wish that we could pay a little bit more. As an instructor myself, who's still actively teaching and came from that side of the industry, I know how low the pay can be, and so one of our goals has always been to make it at least a livable wage. We want to have the ability to pay more, unless any of my employees are listening, in which case we don't. but the idea is that you should be able to make enough money doing this that you're able to have the things that people have when they're in their, 30s and 40s and 50s even. You should be able to pay a mortgage and have a car and have a child, and those things cost money. And, we should expect, for the level of expertise, somebody that's been sticking with it for that long should be able to command a rate that would support that. And so, yeah, Helen is looking at setting that up now. She's still in the initial phase of setting up the scholarship, but it's on its way. I expect it'll be done in a month or two. And one of the other cool things about it is she's aware of the fact that, we fly in Cirruses, and typically people that own those things have a few extra bucks too. So we're going to pitch it out at the greater community once it's all set up, and hopefully get a few more people who are willing to back that and give the opportunity to some of those who are coming up now in the aviation industry a chance to make it to where we all are.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic, and that just demonstrates to me passion in teaching and education. You're very lucky to have Helen on your staff for doing that. I mean, that's a tremendous display of passion and love for teaching and giving back, and I applaud you guys too for supporting that and enhancing it as well. So, well done.
No, she's that's not on us. That's all her. She's awesome. The only good thing that we did was keep her around, and that's kind of one of the things that she earned it more than earned it. But the thing about that, just in having come from a more traditional flight school environment, we saw a lot of people who were really getting pretty good at their profession, but they were treated like the top end, as though we're all a dime a dozen. You're just an instructor.
Yeah.
And really, you keep somebody around for a few years and they get to know their craft, and man, they're a tremendous asset to the company. And that's great. Helen's been teaching in Cirruses now for 5 years and is one of the more high time instructors that we have on staff. I think she's over 25 or 2700 hours in Cirrus. I forget exactly.
Wow.
She'll probably correct me tomorrow.
I'm jealous about that too. I used to be in a fractional program, and I continue to fly an SR-22, a G2 model. And that's why I make the comment. I absolutely love the airplane.
Absolutely. They're definitely really cool airplanes.
Yeah, and I would, I took the CSIP training. By the way, does the CSIP designation and that syllabus still exist? I had heard there was like a change a year or two ago.
They've modified it, but yeah, it's going strong. There are approximately, well, this is true as of September. I was at the factory in Duluth, Minnesota, and they put on a 2-day refresher course for all the CSIPs. And they said there were about 400 of them in the world. Most of them are in the U.S., but they're spread all over the place. We had guys from Brazil. We had guys from Europe. There are at least two of them in Australia. I met them. And, I'm sure I'm missing a few other places. But, sure. But yeah, it's out there. It's going strong, and they're doing some great work. They of all the manufacturers that I've run across, they put the most money into developing training tools and tactics and support stuff and make it available for either free or virtually free. So, I mean, there's no reason not to have it.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. So I want to touch upon the flyouts real quick. That's probably one of my favorite things to do as an instructor, is to organize these things, because I think that they're if they're not done, they're missed learning opportunities. Think about how much you could learn, if you were to fly from Seattle to Alaska. I mean, mm-hmm. all the things you have to deal with and all that. So how long have you guys been doing the flyouts?
Oh, pretty much since we started the company. And that's a large part of the way we do training. We do it by the day. And usually groups of days. So, 3 to 7 days in a row we spend with the client. And so, if you're in a place where, you're working on instrument rating with somebody, let's say, and that they're gonna, and you're in Missouri, cause why not? And they're gonna go to Florida. And so say, hey, well, let's take a trip to Florida and we'll stay the night. Where would you go in Florida? And so I did that a couple of years ago with a fellow, and we ended up working our way down to Key West, and he didn't see much of the outside because I had him under the blinders the whole time, but got the experience flying across country. We had another guy, do his instrument rating, started in Evansville, Indiana, worked his way down to the Baja Peninsula into Mexico, then back up, then he flew into Canada. He wanted to get some international experience, which was great. Took his check ride out here in Seattle.
Nice.
And flew home with his instrument rating. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Please finish.
I was just going to say, you can do an awful lot more with training than go to the practice area or the same 5 airports that you've always used.
Yeah, and I don't know how much you've talked to Al, but he's a big proponent of that, and we love that here. But hearing you describe, then, is it mostly accelerated training, like the 10-day schools, or some accelerated fashion, no matter how long it takes?
It's accelerated after a fashion, that's for sure. We do, our instrument rating is a 14-day course, but we always tell guys you don't want to do it straight through. Do it in 3 or 4 chunks of time. So we'll work 3 to 5 days in a row. We'll take a bit of time off for a week or so, and then come back and do it again. We find that you can soak up a lot into the sponge by this immersion style of training, but at certain points it gets full, so you got to let them wring it out for a bit, and so we take a break. That's a little different from person to person, but we work with our clients and figure out what's their schedule, what's their stamina like. And we do that for our private as well. That's 21 days worth of work. But I usually tell guys, you're looking at 2 months worth of time, and give 21 days in those 2 months, and we can get you through. And that's generally what those two accelerated programs work like. Yeah.
You know what? That's actually an interesting philosophy of doing it and breaking it into chunks.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that.
You know what? I admire that a lot, because you could immerse somebody into this type of stuff, and it just becomes a it ends up being too much after a while. But I think that those breaks are so needed, because when if imagine if, well, I know that when I was starting to fly for the, when I started flying for the airline, you know, you were in training for a month, and it just got to be so mind-numbing, and, you know, towards the end, you're just like, whatever.
You that know. Explains a lot.
I'm sure it does.
A lot of people have concerns over accelerated training, and I think it generally circles around that fact that if you do it for too long, you start to lose some resolution in the brain there. But if you take it in chunks and you do it in a time where they really have time to really master this particular facet of the training, and then back off and give them time to digest it a bit and come back and do it. We've had just fantastic success with it. So
yeah, there you go.
I aim to keep doing it that way.
I took a 10-day instrument course, and they signed me off to take the check ride, but the weather wasn't cooperating, and a couple weeks went down the road, and all of a sudden I didn't have the confidence anymore. So I did it over the next several months, quite honestly, as winter hit and work got in the way. But I will tell you, I loved those 10 days. I mean, I was just doing the simulator in the basement in the morning, or no, at night. I was doing little ground school in the morning and flying every afternoon in the environment. To me, it was just awesome. So I can see a hybrid approach like you're suggesting could be a lot of fun for the student and really drive home.
Oh, absolutely.
The learnings that you want to accomplish.
Yeah.
It fits their lives pretty well, too. I mean, most people that we work with are, you know, they purchased or are in the process of purchasing an airplane, so they're a few years down the road from college, and they've got lives. You know, they've got families, they've got a business probably. So, you know, we can they don't really have time to stretch it out over 6 or 8 months. I actually get a lot of calls from people who try to do it that way, and it's just not working for them. And they give us a call and say, "Can you come out and get me through this? You know, I need to get done, and I'm taking three steps forward and two steps back when I train where I work, and I have to take 2 weeks off, and then I get a 3-hour lesson in or something like that." So
yeah.
I'm obviously a little biased, but I'm a believer in it. I think it's a great way to go.
Well, yeah, no, I think that's a part of the reason why a lot of people, I think, drop out of flight training is that, well, one, you know, you drop the news on somebody that, hey, you know, it could take a year to get your rating. Well, that's a long wait, a long time to wait for something, and you know, and that's, people lose interest pretty quick. But if you break it down into 2 months, you know, the difference between 2 months and 10 days, you know, ultimately at the end of the day is not that much. You know, it's really that not a big difference, right? And then you end up you know, and if you break it down even further into flying time, I mean, that's really, you know, you're talking a matter of a couple days at that point, if you break it down into chunks like that. So that really the time frame that you're looking at getting your instrument rating or additional rating, private license, whatever, and that and kind of your method is, hey, 2 months, 2-3 months, that's not bad.
And as long as with anything, if you set expectations on the front end, I think people are more accepting. It's if you don't set expectations, they set their own, and then you're in the reactive game and you can never live up to it, I would think.
That's so critical. I think you just hit a nail on the head. I don't know if you were swinging the hammer at it or not, but the idea that of setting an expectation, setting up a roadmap to success, I mean, that's so critical. And it's so often that I hear stories of people not getting that. You know, am I halfway done? Am I my 10th way done? Am I almost there? You know, where am I? And if you can set up a number of days, say, hey, look, you know, our average is 14 days. Everybody gets through their instrument rating. Well, not everybody. 80%, 85% of people get done that period of time. So let's put them all on the schedule right now so that you can look and see November 30th is when we anticipate you taking your test. And, you know, if you're not ready, you're not ready. We're not going to send you out the door. But you're going to be so close if we do.
Right.
If you can put that schedule, you can set up that expectation, and you can pay attention to it during the course of the training. You know, if we're zooming ahead or falling a little behind, better to find that out sooner. And then people generally, not generally, actually my excuse, almost without exception, people respond very well to that. and not so well to getting something sprung on them at the end there.
Of course not, yeah. So do you have a fleet of G1s, G2s, G3s, SR20s, SR22s, the turbos, and then match it to the kind of airplane either that someone will be buying, or is it required they bring their own airplane? How do you meet the needs of the individual type Cirrus owners?
Yeah, no, we can do pretty much any of those things. We've got normally aspirated SR-22s and turbo SR-22s online. We have the ability to get a hold of SR-20s. You know, the way we do our training, we tend not to need one terribly often, and so we do lease backs with the guys that own them and are looking to make a few bucks on the side. But we've got in Vegas, we've got a Fiki or a Nonice, turbo, and that's a 20, it's a 2010 or a 2011. I forget exactly, but anyway, it's pretty darn new. And we've got an Avidyne, normally aspirated, and we've got the same setup up here in Seattle. Vegas actually has a full motion Cirrus simulator too, so we can put you in there and really give you a workout.
And so I take it that you don't have a full motion simulator in Seattle, but do you make some use of some kind of sim for those in the Seattle area?
The best that we do for there is usually an avionics training type of thing, just mm-hmm. on a laptop or on a PC, where we can punch buttons without actually having to be in the airplane. I would like to have, of course, like a sit-in simulator up here, but the cost of making the things with the amount of interest that we've seen in sims is just makes it not a good idea for here, at least not at the moment. That's one of my big harping points is sim training can be so valuable, and so few people actually recognize that. You can get so much, and one of my big things for the last year or so has been the study of some psychologies of the emergency situation when we get ourselves into real serious trouble.
I think the technical term is deep doo-doo.
Well, there's a few technical terms for it, and I'm not sure which ones are all appropriate for the radio show, but I'll let that one stand because I think it's descriptive. But yeah, it's really amazing what happens, how the brain will shut off, how you'll do certain things, and just it's really been fascinating to me to learn about that, because that as an instructor I was never taught about any of this stuff. But I actually went into studying other fields that tend to encounter that sort of things more, that the armed forces, police, like firefighters and martial artists, they all have had to deal with that aspect of their humanity, and they've got techniques for it, and they work strikingly well, but we just sort of scratch the surface of it in general aviation. So that's my latest thing. Is I wrote a course for it, taught it in it's like a 3-hour talk at the latest Cirrus pilot gathering in California. We were in 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I forget which it was, and Van Nuys, just north of LA. So anyway. I want to go off on a tangent. Oh, there you go. It's got to reel me back in here.
That point, it's time for a forward slip.
Yeah, right. Whatever. Better leave that part to me, Al.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Well, no, there's one thing that I wanted to talk about, and that's the passion of flight training. And John and I, we had a conversation about this, and you know what it kind of means to be a flight instructor, and you know how you could do things differently. And the thing that poised the question about this was, I asked John a question. You know, it's a philosophical question, and it's, can you make $100,000 a year as a flight instructor? And Mark, what's your answer? What do you think?
Well. And not being a flight instructor, you know, it's a little bit hard for me to answer that. But I've always been a big believer that if you do things right, and you get as my dad always taught me, if you're the best there is, you'll get what you need out of whatever you're doing. And he sold brassieres, but he was a terrific sales guy, and it was because he had a passion for it. So my assumption, and I'll use that word assumption, is that, yeah, it's certainly possible, especially when I hear people like John who are talking about not only flight instructing, but expanding the envelope, right, so that there's more to it than just instructing. There's ferrying airplanes. There's providing different things. So John, it almost sounds like you're making yourself a conglomerate of all things Cirrus.
Well, we're working on it, but there's plenty of other people out there doing it too. We've just been doing it a long time, but you know, as far as that goes, you know, I wouldn't put an exact number on it, though I do know guys that have made that much money instructing. They tend to have to work their pants off to do it, but it is totally doable, and I say that because I know a guy, at least one guy I talked to this year that said he was on track to do it. Running a company, you know, there's a lot more costs associated with that, so we don't get up there. Hopefully one day, but in any case, I think it really ties in to the concept of, first of all, you got to enjoy it, and that's not some, you know, lame dodge to say. And you get to live on food stamps, but
yeah, you could go to the airlines and make less.
Yeah, yeah, you sure can.
Actually, it's funny. A few of my employees, some of the guys, have said to me, you know, we expect that some people are going to turn over in this job. That's just part of what happens. But a number of them have said, you know, this is going to be very difficult because I'm taking a 35-40% pay cut to go work for the regionals. From leaving this job teaching, so I think that's at least that's a good sign. But
yeah.
Still, I'd like it to be a little better, be able to pay the guys a little better. But yeah, you totally can. Part of the problem that we encounter, I think, is one, we've got a lot of inertia from history. You know, paying an instructor $15 an hour is unfortunately a very common thing, and it's tough to break from that, both from the side of I guess many employers would have some trouble with it, but also to be able to charge what you have to charge to be able to live. You know, maybe not 100 G's, but you know, we're certainly talking about more than 22,000 a year, 23, 25 even thousand a year. That's really small amount of money. So from that side of it, you have to be able to charge your clientele enough to be able to make that much. So there's just that.
Right.
So you get a little pushback too from some clients. I've certainly had the phone call where people say, like, wow, you're more than twice as much as, you know, instructor X down the street. Why should I work with you? And, you know, I've got my answers for it, but ultimately, you know, we've all been teaching for a really long time. We only hire veterans, and we're very specialized. And you know, I'm horribly biased in this regard, but I think we're some of the better instruction in the industry, and it's worth the money. So you have to, as the instructor, from that side of it, you have to know that, and you have to believe that about yourself. For a while, I was shy about telling people, you know, what it costs, and you know, I'm not. It's basically coming from that history of saying, well, I used to get paid 11. No kidding. And when I first started teaching, I was not at Cirrus. I was paid, but at this other company, I was paid $11 an hour. And,
wow.
And I remember how odd it seemed to me. You know, I'm taking somebody in a little vessel. I'm accelerating it up to 100 miles an hour, taking them a mile plus over the face of the earth, and they're trusting me to teach them, well, first of all, to keep them from hurting us,
right.
and teach them to be able to do that themselves with their family, with their friends, people they care about, yet they're upset when they have to pay more than like 50% less than what they pay their plumber, you know, like
right.
That's it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It has always been a little confusing. But again, we just have standards that are set, and the industry has set them, and set some expectation that, you know, your flight hours are part of your compensation. We're helping you build time, and really the unspoken statement there is we're helping you build time so that you can get the heck out of this job and get a quote unquote real one. And I think that's part of the root of our problem.
Right. Yeah. No, definitely. I think, well, yeah, not to, we're going to get right back to that, but a couple of the, of listeners kind of, did the math for us. In order to make $100,000 a year as a flight instructor, somebody broke it down, you have to charge $50 an hour, fly 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for 50 weeks.
Wow,
that's
right.
That's a lot of flying.
That's a lot of good weather.
I would say $50 an hour is low. Most people I know charge not quite twice that, but $75-$80 an hour is not uncommon from what I've seen and just in my colleagues in the industry. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean that, and hey, you know, for this specialized kind of training, and you know, to fly, let's say to fly up to Alaska. You know, that's worth the money right there. You know, just the learning opportunity and things like that. Taking yourself outside of your comfort limits, and mm-hmm. somebody's willing to do that. I mean, I think that there should be a fair price to that.
Well, and I think John hit the nail on the head. And as we continue the conversation with John Viscus of the Flight Academy here on Simple Flight Radio, is that there are others that are willing to do that cheaper, Al.
Right.
And that's why I think, you know, that's the battle. But I've worked for a lot of companies in technology. I've always seemed to work for the more expensive one. And John, you're right. The thing that you have to do is differentiate yourself with incremental value, that it's not the same as the other guys. So to that point, and we've heard a lot about the Flight Academy, but what are some of the things that you're doing to differentiate yourself? And maybe what are the things that you'd like to see happen even further? Maybe plans for the future that we'll see out of the Flight Academy.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, it's the experience level of our instructors is far and away well above what I would say the average flight school is. And I'm not trying to trash anybody. I'm just saying, where do you go to get an instructor who's got, you know, on average in our company, 2,000 hours in type? And I don't mean total time. I just mean in type of aircraft. And most of that's been teaching. You know, so there's that. That's a differentiator. It's that somebody who really knows this thing inside and out. Plus people who've been doing it a long time. The thing that we think about when we think about instruction is the airplane. You know, we think about, does this instructor know the airplane? Do they know the regs? Do they know how to read weather? That's really barrier low. That's entry-level stuff. That's entry-level stuff. So what we're looking for is somebody now who, after they've been doing it for a few years, begins to understand the psychology of it. They understand that their client is going to have trouble with occluded fronts every time. No matter who you are, you're probably not going to be able to tell me very well how they work. So we know to put more time into it, or more importantly, when we're up there flying with you, we know that and can identify very quickly if you've been I'm just picking some examples here, but like if you've been trained to or self-trained to pitch for altitude and power for airspeed, you know, the big bane of the instrument world, where somebody shoves the nose down and then ends up playing reactionary pilot instead of proactive pilot. And not only can we see that you've got the tendency, but we know how to mold you in the right direction and get you to be much smoother, much more precise, and actually make flying a lot easier for you. But you've got to have somebody with some time who's been around to do that. So there's
sure.
that.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, we pride ourselves on our professionalism. Our instructors are top-notch people. They're not going to show up in jeans with holes in them, or flip-flops or sandals or something, or a t-shirt. You know, they're going to dress professionally, they're going to act professionally, and that's going to show through in what they do. We've got a syllabus that has been set up for every training, no matter what it is. Sometimes that syllabus gets modified on the fly, but that's also an area of expertise where our instructors kind of shine, I think. So there's that side of it too. Plus, you know, like I said earlier, I've had guys call me and say, I've been working on this for a long time. I'm trying to get it done, my private instrument, whatever it is. And my flight school won't play ball with me on that. I told them I wanted to work 5 days straight, and they said no. You know, here's a guy asking to give you money, and you're telling him, no, that's not the way we do it. And so I just find that to be an area that underlines something that we could all do better. You know, as instructors and that we can listen to our clients and they can tell us what they want. And, you know, maybe what they want isn't perfectly right, but certainly you can channel that interest and make them kind of a hybrid idea between what they're asking for and what you know as a professional instructor you'd be able to give them the best results with. So anyway, I think it's that and many other things. It's tough to say, but the other thing that our interview process is kind of interesting. You know, we don't start testing technical knowledge until well down the road of an interview. We want to know who you are. We want to know how you interact with us as people, you know, and one of the common questions we ask ourselves is, you know, could you spend a week with this person that we just interviewed and not want to throttle them at the end? You know, it's, can we get somebody who, is this person someone who's, you know, fairly affable and able to understand the flow of conversation and see some of the subtle points about what's going on with them and their interaction with
you? Do you interview your students?
Sometimes. We don't have many students that we've flat out turned down and won't work with.
We just throttle them after 2 weeks.
Well, you know, or just, yeah, the problem fixes itself. So, no, I find that, that's one of the cool things about doing this job is that there are a lot of different people, and different personalities, different backgrounds, and every one of them is really fascinating, and they all are good people. You know, they want to learn to fly and we like flying. So I really haven't had much trouble from the clientele side of things at all. So that's been great. But what could we do? I would love to see, you know, better integration of the technology. You guys were talking about ForeFlight, you know, obviously referencing iPad or Slate tablets that we can bring with us in the airplane. And, you know, there's so much that we can do to use that kind of technology to augment our training. I already do it. You know, I have my iPad with me. We fly for the morning. We sit down for lunch, and I've got, you know, some pictures on the iPad that I've saved of prognostic charts maybe or radar, and I can show them to guys, and we can pull up things and have a nice discussion that tech will add to it substantially, as opposed to me, you know, doing the thing where, like, there I was, and, you know, I got my left hand is that airplane and my right hand is the other airplane, and, you know, we were inverted. But it's you can do a lot more. You got that one. But
yeah, exactly.
But there's a lot more that we can do one of the things that I want to do, and this has been my area of focus, is seeing how we can integrate that stuff a little bit better and make our product even more streamlined and make that apparent to our clients. Plus more trips and stuff like that. We've actually this year we did our first we have an airplane in Hawaii.
Sign me up.
So, what's that?
Sign me up for the Hawaii thing.
Well, it's awesome. We have the plane there. We put an instructor there for the month. I believe we're doing it in April, and you know, guys can come over, airline over. You know, they don't have to take the 15 and a half hour Cirrus flight over. That's a long time to sit, I had to tell you. But
yeah, but it's a Cirrus.
Well, you can't slide the seat all the way back, and your right seat is a big gas tank that fills up everything. You can't even see out the right window, so it gets a little claustrophobic. But in any case, you don't have to deal with that. So people come over, and we can fly around the islands and stuff like that. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can do, and really, you know, you just have to open your minds up to the possibilities. And fortunately, my business partner, Luke, is more inventive than I am. He's come up with a large number of these ideas, but like Alaska, for example, he put himself through college on going up fishing in Alaska. He worked with the commercial boats, and he loved it up there, and he said, why don't we do a trip? You know, at best, we get it paid for, and it's a free trip to Alaska for us, and that'd be cool. And we did our 10th trip up there this year, and next year's three-fifths full already.
Nice. So,
that's very good. I'd love to do that.
Yeah. Going back to your interview process, you said that you like to ask the question of, can I spend a week with this person? And I want to point out how important that is that, you know, not only do I feel my job as an instructor is to, you know, teach people how to be very, you know, high quality airmen, but also, you know, that just to be their friend. Okay. And that's a huge portion of this, because I don't think that lessons can be effectively taught at, you know, 2 hour time blocks. You know, for me, it's sometimes the pre-brief even takes 2 hours, and then, you know, the next person's coming up to take the airplane and so on and so forth. But you know, I've spent 12 hours in a day with a student before, and you have to know when to turn your instruction hat on, but then you also know how to have to turn it off and be a friend and listen and be in tune with what's going on in their life. And that also teaches, you know, a good instructor would, you know, listen to that and tune themselves to, you know, teach maybe a little bit differently if you find out something high stress has happened in somebody's life, or that, hey, they just won the lottery, and hey, let's keep this fire going, you know what I mean?
I'm winning the Powerball.
If they win the Powerball, then I don't worry so much about how much they're spending on the lesson. But no, it's and just from a, you know, personal benefit side of it, like you said, you can take the instructor hat off and listen to them talk for a little bit. You'll meet some really amazing people. Never ceases to amaze me what people have done to be successful in their lives, what they've done just as accomplishments, places they've been. I couldn't even begin to catalog all the cool people I've met doing this and continue to meet. And they're really, you know how, like, when you go to Oshkosh and you know that just about everybody there is probably going to be okay in your book, at least on one level.
Yeah.
Because they're there, right?
Right.
And you can see that same thing in instructing. They're here because they want to do what you hopefully also love to do.
Yeah.
As such, you know, they're going to be okay. So, you know, have that discussion and, you know, tell me a little bit about how you did it. I mean, I've met people that have earned enough money literally making Dixie cups in a factory to be able to afford to buy their own airplane.
Wow.
So that's pretty good. I'm just looking at one right now. Those little plastic squares that hold bread packages,
yeah,
closed.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
One of our clients makes those, and that got him enough money to just the little plastic thingy. And that got him enough money to buy an airplane. I mean, how cool is that? Who would have thought?
Actually, I'm right with you on that. There's so many people I know, whether it's the plastic this, the metal that, just the littlest things. But just like you, they got good at what they do, and there was a need. They had the supply. And now they're buying more than one airplane in some cases.
Yeah, or one that burns slightly different smelling stuff. So
yeah, right.
There's just a wealth of awesome people in the world, and instructing is a great way to do it, because you really start to become, an ally to this person and not just a teacher.
Right.
And that's really one of the cool sides of it. Just in your earlier statement about, you know, what's rewarding about it, and I'd say just the people are pretty awesome.
Absolutely. You know what? One of the greatest joys of getting to know people in aviation, is just merely a bonding agent for a community or a lifestyle. But the cool thing about, I think that I've really started to understand and look at, that what makes aviation cool are the people, because what everybody does outside of aviation, and they bring it into aviation, it really just, it's a melting pot of awesomeness.
Well, and I agree, as you know, and I always talk about community being the combination of two words, common unity, and you just called it a bonding agent. And whether a person is a pilot, whether they're old or young, male, female, has a plane, doesn't have a plane, has a license, doesn't, we're all share that exact same passion and spark, and that's what I love about it. You know, we have people in our flying club that don't have a pilot's license, some that have no plans to get a pilot's license, but yet they share in the conversation and they share in the passion. And so I think, Al, to your point, that's exactly what's exciting about it. We all have that same fire, if you will.
Yeah, same fire. And I think that John touched on it, that hey, if you can realize that, that's part of the rewarding part about being an educator in aviation. You do get to meet cool people, and you know, hey, they become great friends. The relationships that you create are just unbelievable, because somebody's putting a trust into you, you know, to help teach them how to be their own corporate pilot, or how to fly their family into hazardous terrain, but also, you know, teach them how, you know, become a friend of theirs. It's you know, the responsibilities are just so great, and it's just an awesome responsibility.
Yeah, it, teaching people a new skill, teaching people new things is pretty cool and rewarding. Obviously, we talked a little bit about the compensation needs to match that, but I think we're heading the right direction. Hey, John, I wanted to ask you another question. I asked you, you know, what you want to start doing. The other two-thirds of my question when I talk to people is, what are you doing that you want to stop, and what are you doing that you think you do really well? And so it's the start, stop, and continue.
Hmm. Which part of it do you want me to go for?
Well, you gave us the start with the technology and all that. So what are you doing now that you think you need to stop doing that's not helping, that's not being seen as value? And that's an unfair question, let me know that as well.
What do I need to stop? Well, I mean, let's see. It's the person as flawed as me has many places to go. So, no, I think one of the things that I'd like to see change a bit is kind of like some of the perception of aviation. Or do you mean like me as a company here? Or?
That was my intent, but wherever you want to take it.
Now I'll try and take it as a company. What do I want to do that we're not already doing? Well,
actually, what do you want to stop doing that you are doing? That's what, you know, okay. As you've seen your business over the last 10 years, you've obviously found things that work really, really well for you, and you've made a name for yourself. But are there things that now, at 10 years later, you're saying, you know what, we really need to stop doing X and more focus on Y?
Well, I think that one of the things that that Luke and I prided ourselves on is, you know, we have branched out to do some other things, and you know, honestly, we've tried a few things that just didn't work out that well, and have said, no, we're not going to do that anymore. You know, like a few trips that people just weren't interested in. But you have to remember your core, and our core in this case is instruction. So we're not going to back off from that. You know, we do these ferry flights, we do these kind of adventure trips, and that sort of thing. But we can't forget, you know, that the bread and butter is the instruction, the getting up in a plane with a person and showing them how to operate it safely and what to do in that case. So, you know, the thing that I would do it's kind of a difficult one, though, is I have to get out of the cockpit a little bit more. We've actually been trying to do that over the last year. The problem is it's tough to run a business when you're in an airplane. So,
good point. Yeah.
That's something that what it results in, you know, emails that get missed or phone calls that don't happen on time, you know, that kind of stuff. And that affects the perception of the business, that affects the perception of the industry, you know, and it's our jobs as professional instructors, and I mean that not just the Flight Academy, but everybody, to you know, get responses to people in a timely manner and make them understand. So there's a balance that probably still the pendulum swings a bit, how much to spend in the airplane, how much to spend on the ground, and we're working on that. I feel like we've gotten better at it, but there's still a bit of room to go yet on it.
Yeah. No, I think that's got to be a really exciting time in your business where, hey, you know what? We're growing, we're catching on, you know, and it's been a good road, a fun road, and you know, it's in order to do what's best for the business. Hey, that's one thing that you have to do.
Yeah, it's tough to get out of the cockpit, though. It's a fun place to be, and it's got one of the best views for as offices go. So, I'll never stop teaching by any stretch, but I've dialed it back. We used to do 800 plus hours a year, and ooh, I think it's down to more like like, for me at least, it was like 450 to 500 this year, that I'll do. So that's down a bunch. And, you know, plus we travel a lot to that. So add a day at the beginning and the end to sit in an airliner and, it stacks up.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think that's a lot of flying. That's what you used to do. That's an airline schedule, you know, for the most part. But I think that's a lot of fun being able to reach out and go all over the world, meet cool people. I think that's one of the things that, you know, is that the airlines don't really, you know, fulfill. You get to interact with crews and everything, airline crews, and fly around with them, and the people that you meet are absolutely fantastic. But I think that there's a bond that if you can teach somebody to achieve their dreams, their aviation dreams, they're able to just that bond. There's something special about it, and you know, it's very rewarding.
And that there can be people you'll know for the rest of your life from it. I was just reflecting with one of my first clients ever. Lives in St. Louis, and we were just reflecting. We've known each other for almost 12 years now, and it's just sort of mind-boggling to me. I realize that doesn't sound like a long time to some of your listeners, but man, I was 24 12 years ago, and I've known this guy, and he's been flying a Cirrus ever since, and we've stayed in contact and stayed friends, and that's a pretty cool side of it too, just to have these long-lasting friendships, and at least in our case, to get to know people all over the nation. I feel I've been in every state in a Cirrus, and probably know somebody in every one of them, and that's really kind of cool.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I'm jealous.
Yeah, I've had a lot of interaction with Cirrus, especially with some of the sales folks, and you know they're great people as well. And I know in talking to them to see the relationships they have with their customers, not unlike the relationship you have with your customers. It's pretty special. Again, not only do you have the aviation bond, but there's that business relationship that just accentuates, you know, the value, if you will, but more important, just the friendship. I can't describe it anything but that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Well, very cool, John. This is exciting. I could talk, you know, till I'm blue in the face about this because I'm very passionate about it.
He's currently green, so it just seems to
I got a couple more colors to go. No, but I think that's, you know, the passion that you orate to the listeners about flight instruction, it's a very cool career. It's very rewarding. You know, it's a responsibility that shouldn't be taken lightly from an instructor standpoint and also from a passion standpoint. And you know, I definitely applaud you and keep up the good work. That's really cool what you guys are doing out there in Seattle.
Well, thanks. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk a little bit about it. I mean, this is more than just a job to a lot of us. You know, it's something you sit in at least at 7:30 in the evening on a Sunday night, my time. It's something that you don't mind getting on and talking about it for a while. It's really good stuff. So I hope that some of the folks listening out there might think about what they could do with their aviation career other than the ones that were generally handed as the more stereotypical aviation career paths. So
and John, just to make sure our audience does get it, I believe the website is www.theflightacademy.com. Is that correct?
That's it.
Very good. So, John Fiskus, thanks so much for spending your evening with us. We enjoyed it, and you have to promise that when you get to Chicago next, you look us up, and we'll give you a Skyline tour in our SR-22.
Well, and when you come out, I will take you up in one of ours and on one of the many clear days in Seattle and show you.
Yes. You're going to break that myth.
Yeah, well, I mean, you saw the picture. That was
That picture was photoshopped. Come on.
No.
I took that from my rooftop about 8 hours ago.
Yeah, I'm just kidding you. Fair enough.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. But, John, thank you so much. We'll be in touch, and enjoy the rest of your night.
And continued success to you.
Thanks, guys. Take care, and fly safe.
All right, thanks. You too.
All right, John. See you later.
All right, thanks.
All right,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. How about that?
That's pretty neat. I like people that are passionate about the flying and passionate about training people, like you always say, to achieve their goals. And that, I think that's 50% of the problem that we're dealing with. Obviously, we've been through some tough economic times, but half of that, as I say, is just getting the right attitude, treating people, and delivering value. You'll get value in return.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that there's so many different learning opportunities outside of, okay, going to the stalls or go to the practice area, doing stall, steep turn, slow flight. Come back for a few touch and goes and call it a day. You know, now I listen to that, and I'm like, man, that's boring.
Yeah. Well, and it's not probably the first couple times that a student does it, but, yeah. You know, we...
Yeah,
the world's changed. What we learned, like when I got my license in 1976, it's the airplanes are different, the practice areas are different, we're different. So I think that the training has to change.
Absolutely. Well, very good. Special thanks to John and the Flight Academy for coming on. That was a great conversation.
Yeah.
But anyway, on to another favorite conversation of ours.
Let me guess. Hangar talk.
How'd you guess?
Because it's the same thing every time. I love the predictability, and so do our listeners, I'm sure.
I need to be spontaneous. Well, I got spontaneous for you.
Uh-oh. I don't know that I want to. Do I need to get the beeper ready or the,
nope,
the
nope.
censorship
you
button?
You absolutely do not. You have a. We have a local pilot here based at the PWK airport with us tonight.
We have a studio audience?
We have a studio. We've got two people with us tonight. Can you believe it? It's
yeah,
awesome.
Well, you know, you're kind of a big deal.
No, you are. But
oh, no,
here
no,
he
no,
is. He was in. We're bringing him back to the airwaves. He used to run a talk radio show here in Chicago in the mornings. But Mr. Rob Sherman, how you doing?
Am I on yet? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I can't hear myself in my headphones. You're turning up the volume there. There we go. Okay.
Amateur radio hour.
No, that's all right. When I worked, when I did morning drive on WJJG Chicago, we had the sliders, and you have a twist-type dial.
He's got a slider over there.
We got one slider.
He doesn't know what the hell he's doing, though. He's just turning dials and all of that. So JJG, I don't think I could even say that. WJJG.
That sounds like an airport code.
Joseph J. Gentile, the Baron of Barrington. He had the car dealership, Barrington Chrysler Plymouth. And Joe, he was born in 1923 and died either about 2 years ago. Might have been a year ago. Might have been 3 years ago. Something like that. World War II veteran, and he owned the radio station that I broadcast from, where I did morning drive 5 days a week, and it was great. It was almost as fun as flying an airplane.
Yeah.
Never.
Well, welcome back to the airways.
Yeah, thank you. Exactly.
So, what'd you think? You were here. You were secretly tuned in to the whole flight training conversation. What do you think?
Oh, I thought it was a lot of fun. I especially liked the part about where, you know, he's talking about you could have a job where most of the training takes place in a hotel room. Where could I get a job like that?
Absolutely.
Actually, I did a lot in my 10-day thing in the basement of my house, because they set up a simulator in the basement of my house, and that's where I learned from.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
You mentioned that you were flying planes back in, was it 1976?
Yes, I got my license in 1976.
In the airplane that I fly, it was built 4 years ago in 2008, and it's an all-glass cockpit. So if I were to try to fly that airplane that you used to fly with the round steam gauges, I wouldn't know what to do. I wouldn't recognize that stuff. I know where the airspeed indicator and the VSI, the vertical speed indicator, and the tachometer and all that stuff. I know where that is on the box type displays, the computer screen type displays. But if you gave me those round steam gauges, what does that one do? What does that one do? I wouldn't know what to do with them.
Well, let's see. That's what we go through in these changes. As a matter of fact, I could even show you how to use the slide rule. Instead of a calculator.
But you're dating yourself.
But did you bring a slide rule with you today?
No. I could call it up on YouTube, though.
Let's see if I brought my slide rule with me.
In aviation terms, E6B. I love those things.
You know what? I like the electronic E6Bs.
I still teach the old school one.
Good for you. You should. And people know that I'm really trying to get my commercial rating, not as hard as I should be, and you know, I try to do the stuff the old-fashioned way, but if you look at the King tapes...
Holy cow, oh he God. Actually... Gee, that's like an engineering slide roll.
This guy has got
you know,
a
you're probably
roll.
Wondering, why am I bringing in the four different bags that I came in with? You know, these are my information sources, and if the battery runs out in my calculator, I've got my slide roll with me that I used in high school. Oh Highland man. Park
next
High
thing
School
I know,
back in the 60s.
Wow.
They next thing you know, he's going to have a watch that has hands on it.
There, I got my right hand on my watch, which is on my left wrist.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Wow.
There it is. There it is. It's got hands
on
it.
I got hands, too. Come on. Work with me. That was just a joke.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, that's good. Yeah. So you had a, I think, let's go look it back on your flight training, Mark. What was your favorite part?
I think the takeoffs and landings were the favorite thing that I did in evidence, and I should bring my logbook back then. I worked at the airport, even though I was supposed to be going to the university there, but I happened to find my... And at lunchtime, I would rent the plane for 0.3, 0.4, and just do a couple touch-and-goes, three or four.
Yeah.
It was a non-towered field, and I took so much pride in greasing the Warriors. It was the Piper 140 before the Warrior came out, then the Warriors and the Arrows, and it was just... That was what I loved to do. And to this day, I love my trips, but when it gets to be the takeoffs and landings, that's where I get the biggest thrill.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, I'm going to ask Rob. Rob is about ready to take his check ride, isn't he? Aren't you? You've got it scheduled here coming up.
That's right. I'll be taking my check ride with Shanghai Bob, who was a guest on your show about a month ago.
A good pilot's always learning. Bob Schmelzer.
We anticipate doing that on, that's right, Bob Schmelzer. We anticipate doing that on Thursday.
All right.
Now, I had my first check ride with him last week on Wednesday. It was completely successful because from my perspective, the purpose of a check ride is to determine whether there are any deficiencies in your training, knowledge, or technique.
Yeah.
And he found a couple of deficiencies. And I say it's the check ride is completely successful because that's the whole purpose of a check ride. It's not to say, yeah, okay, here's your license. It's to find out what is it, if anything, that the CFI, the Certified Flight Instructor, and
right.
I both thought I knew how to do, but there was a gap in my knowledge or in my ability to do that.
Yeah.
Bob was able to find those two things. One had to do with soft field landings. I don't expect to ever do soft field takeoffs and landings, but I'm supposed to know how to do that. And the other was something that you brought up about half an hour ago when you're talking about emergency landings, the forward slip to a landing where you're way up like at 2,000 feet above the ground and you're in an area, your engine just died. And you got houses all around, and there's one little field, and you got to get down, and you got one shot at it. So you have to do a full rudder into the wind to turn the plane a little bit, and you're coming down at a steep angle, but not speeding up that much. And then when you get down real low, that's when you straighten out and you land. I didn't know how to do that.
Yeah,
I just
pulled a chute.
The Cirrus. But in my airplane, I've got a Zodiac, which is built by the material for the plane is built by Zenith Aircraft, and my airplane was manufactured. Where they put the pieces together. The pieces are built by Zenith. And the pieces were put together by AMD Aircraft Manufacturing and Design in Eastman, Georgia, Dodge County, Central Georgia, which is halfway between Macon and the Florida state line.
Wow.
So they put it together for me.
Nice.
And it's just a fabulous airplane. You've seen a picture of the orange.
Oh, I've seen it out here flying. It's awesome. And you can hear, you got such a distinct voice on the radio, and then you can see
can
a distinct,
tell?
Yeah. And you got a distinct looking airplane. It's a orange, the orange Zodiac flying around doing pattern work and things like that. It's a cool airplane. I love it.
Thank you. For those of you who are listening on the radio who want to see the airplane, go to the website, robsherman.com. com, and you'll see a picture of the airplane right at the top of the home page. Click on the airplane, and you got a bigger picture of it.
Yeah, wow. Oh, it's a good. Have you seen it around here, Mark?
I'm sure I have. How many orange airplanes?
That's right.
Yeah,
just one.
Exactly.
You know, good visibility. Yeah, when you're in the haze.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I think that's great.
I'm actually going to type it in right now, so you guys keep talking. I want to see.
That'll be RobSherman.com. You were asking Al about favorite aspect of flying.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm a retired radio talk show host. I did Morning Drive on WJJG.
Yeah.
So my favorite aspect is talking to the flight controllers,
yeah,
the other guys up at the tower.
You sound good on the radio. I heard you today, and it was I got a compliment. You sound like a professional.
Well, I did talk radio for 25 years. Newsmaker interviews, blockbuster guests, the important social and political issues of the day. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Yeah, have you ever heard of... here's a pilot cliche, like the jet pilot voice. You know what that is?
I think I could pick it up. But go
what
for
is it?
It?
No, what is it?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome yeah. yeah, it's the really deep, low,
and yeah, we're cleared to land 1-6. United, blah, blah, blah.
Well, thank you. That's the car. We got to, what's the name of this guy in the room with us here?
This is Alex.
Alex Koutoulis.
Alex went to the website. He got a picture of the of my orange convertible there, and he's wondering, who are those three girls there standing next to my car with the atheist license plate there at the bottom? Thank you very much. What that was all about, I was in Springfield doing some lobbying at the General Assembly, and afterwards I went to the Hooters restaurant there in the southeastern portion of Springfield.
Is this the aviation part of the show?
Just by coincidence, three of the servers were doing a college tuition fundraiser.
Wow.
And they asked permission, would you please allow us to wash your car for a donation to our college tuition fund? So nice guy that I am, I decided to permit them in their bikini top and pocket shorts, I call, because the shorts are, extend down to the pocket, and that's about it.
Sure. Hooters, the very first...
Is this an aviation
show? Well, yeah,
this,
I can relate this back to aviation. So he had my very first cross-country. We flew to Branson, Missouri, then up to Springfield, Missouri. And it was the first time I ever got a crew car. And in Springfield, Missouri, we went to Hooters for lunch.
Yeah.
You got some of the wings. Right?
Yeah.
A little aviation humor there, but not for very little.
Yeah. So, you know what? There used to be a Hooters airline.
Yes,
you remember
I do know that, right. Out of Gary, Indiana.
Yeah, Gary. Where did they go? They flew to...
I think South Carolina or North Carolina, somewhere like that. Myrtle Beach.
Myrtle Beach, that sounds right.
Yeah.
And they, I think they used to be Pace Airlines.
Right.
Pace Airlines.
Sounds
right. Which, I think their call sign was Casino Express.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. I'm going to have to do some serious Wikipedia-ing after this. But
actually, I have to admit that one of the things that I considered as a business that I wanted to do that kept me close to aviation was to open up a restaurant on a field that had, for lack of a better term, like Hooters girls for your line crew to marshal the airplanes in. I thought that would be cool, but in December and January, probably too cool for somebody.
Right? He was going to call it Tilted Kilt, but that name's already taken.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, I was going to call it Flaps. flapjacks like pancakes.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, well, that's all right. But, there was a... flaps, pancakes. You know, the flying pancake breakfast. I don't know.
Flapjacks.
Yeah, flapjacks.
Yeah.
So we have an interesting little venture up to Janesville coming up in mid-December.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I think it was December 15th. So as part of...
It's a Saturday.
Yes.
It's a Saturday, right? And so not just because, but we had Adam Smith of the AOPA on just a few weeks ago. And his big push is flying clubs. And since that show, a lot of flying clubs have been reaching out to Al and I, specifically related to Leading Edge Flying Club that we're part of. And so we're going to have three flying clubs fly to Janesville, Wisconsin, even though the restaurant's under renovation and about half the size, and we're going to meet up and have lunch.
My
there.
Solo cross country was from Papa Whiskey Kilo to Janesville.
Yeah, excellent.
Chicago.
Well, you're going to have to fly the Zodiac up there and join us for pancakes. Flapjacks.
Well, are you going to do a pancake breakfast?
Yeah, we're doing a pancake 15th? Breakfast run on December 15th.
Count me in.
All right.
I'm going to bring the wife.
Please do.
In fact, tomorrow, November 26th, is our 34th wedding anniversary. For 34 years, Celeste has been the perfect wife, perfect in every way, best wife a guy could ever have.
All right. Nice. Well, congratulations.
So you mean that she lets you do aviation?
Actually, she doesn't tell me what to do, and I don't tell her what to do, which is why we're still married after 34 years.
Yeah. I have a philosophy on that. I think we're at 30. Oh, isn't that horrible? I think I'm at 34, and people ask, how do you make it last so long? I always say, two tubes of toothpaste. She squeezes in the middle. I squeeze in the bottom. It's not worth fighting about. We each
That's
get our
right.
own tube, and it makes the wedding, the marriage last.
There you go.
Alex is looking at me like, you're nuts.
We not only have two tubes of toothpaste, we have two refrigerators. So, you know, she doesn't seal up the stuff. You know, it's all, you know, messed up. Okay, fine. She has her supply and her refrigerator. I have my supply and mine.
I think that's a great cause for two airplanes.
Yeah. And the way it sounds, it's pretty soon it's two houses in two parts of the country. And that will make the marriage last by never seeing each other. I don't know.
No, but congratulations. Hopefully we'll see her out at Janesville for some celebration pancakes.
What time did you want us there?
We'll send out some more details regarding that.
We have to talk with the other guys to find out when they're going to be there.
And I'm a day VFR guy. I'm a sport pilot. So I can only fly during daytime. So, by December 15th, the sun doesn't rise until a few minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning. So
yeah.
It'll be mid-morning. We'll let you know exactly.
Okay, that'll work. I guess I'll have to get a preheat that day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, those are speaking of preheats, it's gotten pretty cold here.
Oh, this is nuts. And it really isn't bad. Today was, what, in the 40s? Yeah.
No, it was nice out.
Yeah,
no,
but, it
really
but it's
nice.
Still, I feel it coming, right? We're now heading into
tomorrow
December.
Is supposed to be a high of 32.
Woo! Like I said, the high in Cedar Rapids on Friday was, without the wind, I think it was 16. It was 16, and then the wind on top, at least at the game I was at. It was just nuts.
Yeah.
But
you
know what? We live in the Midwest. We've got to expect it.
Oh, absolutely. I think that was the worst... If I have to complain, and
you don't have to. This is your choice.
That's probably one of the roughest parts about being a CFI, is enduring the cold and the wind. That's all right. I mean, it could be a lot worse, but it shows dedication to be out there with your student pre-flighting rather than waving from the nice warm hut or that. How you doing? You know, having a coffee.
Heard about pre-flighting in the hangar?
Yeah, well, there's some of us don't come from as privileged airports to have a nice warm heated hangar and line personnel to pull out, which Signature does a great job, by the way.
Yeah, by the way, we haven't even mentioned that today, that we do broadcast from the Signature Flight Support Conference Room at Papa Whiskey Kilo, and encourage everyone not only to come by here and join us as Alex and Rob have tonight, but they do a great job around the country, and we really appreciate their support of the radio show at Signature Flight Support.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great place, great view. And you may even catch somebody relieving their dog on the ramp.
I think the dog was doing the relieving.
And that guy was wearing a short sleeve shirt, and it's 30 degrees outside.
Yeah.
The dog had to go.
Yeah.
Hey, don't put the coat on.
Yeah, well, that's all right. If you were a duck, can you imagine how lucky you would be if you were a dog riding around in a Citation 10 like that?
Was that what he was in?
Yeah,
I didn't see what
absolutely
airplane he got into.
He was.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But I'd rather be the human being getting the ride.
Absolutely. Pushing the throttles up.
Wait, what's that? What's the tail booming behind us there?
That is a FX number, engine FX, Foxtrot X-ray. Do you know what
fractional program that's part of?
Yes.
I do know that, but it slipped my mind.
Flight options. FX.
And that's a Lear?
Oh, that's a...
I gotta see.
Well, what's the official answer from our audience? Bombardier.
Oh, I only saw the tail.
Yeah. Well, you should know these things.
I know. Well, I defer to you so much. After all, you are the CFI.
I'll sign your logbook for aircraft recognition. Absolutely. But no, that's a cool airplane, a Bombardier Challenger 300. One was parked here as a Canadian register. It was all silver. It looked like a silver bullet.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, it was nice.
So, you know, we were talking about the Powerball, which I understand will be at least $450 million by the time they pull it, but maybe even over $500 million.
Don't bother buying a ticket. You know why? I already have the winning ticket.
That's what I hear. Actually, as the guy I work with, some of my finances is always telling me, he said, whether you buy a ticket or not, the odds of winning are the same.
Yeah. That's right.
So let's just take a little leap of faith, Mr. Waterloo, Captain Waterloo. You win the $450. What will aviation purchase would you make?
Would I do lump sum, or would I do cash sum?
He would hire you to be his chief pilot.
There you go. I would like that. Let's say you do lump sum. Let's say it's $250 million.
$250 million. Well, Rob said I'll be accepting applications.
Yeah.
I don't think I often think about this on a hourly basis, and I don't think I would go, you know, over the top Citation or, you know, G5, this, that, whatever. I'd probably get something I could manage and fly myself. I'd get a TBM.
Tell us what a TBM is.
TBM 850. It's like, you know what a Pilatus is?
No, but tell the audience.
They know.
A TBM 850. It's a single engine turboprop, like a six passenger turboprop. And good fun, really fast, and
you know what you need to go with that airplane?
What's that?
An island in the Caribbean to fly to.
Yes, yeah.
Well, if you're going to the Caribbean,
absolutely.
See, I think about the mission. If I were going that far, like the Caribbean, I might look at a Citation or something. But you know, I'm with you. I do a lot of Midwestern flying, either a small King Air, and maybe an Eclipse, a Pilatus. Meridian.
Yeah.
I know TBM, they're not equivalent, but somehow.
Yeah.
We're laughing because Alex here, who doesn't have a microphone, sorry, Alex, I would buy some hours and sit in the back for 100 hours. That's what Alex says.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think let's get the crew of flight options out here and get you signed up.
That would be cool.
Absolutely.
No, I'd like to sit in front.
Yeah. Rob, what would you get?
Well, I have everything I want, so what I would do with the quarter billion dollars after taxes, I would use the money the old-fashioned way. I would buy political influence. I would use the money to buy political influence to, for starters, I would support legislators and candidates for Congress who would promise not to implement those user fees
of
$100 per flight.
Yeah.
How's that for a starter?
Absolutely. I like it. I like it. That's not bad at all.
And then Alex, by the way, just said then he'd buy a PC-12.
Yeah.
I think that's a good one. A PC-12 is a very good airplane.
PC-12, keep the user fees down. A TBM, Mark? Oh, you said a King Air.
Well, I mentioned all those things. The thing that probably would make the most sense for me would be like a TBM. I could be very happy. Or even a Meridian. I want burning kerosene, though. That's the one check mark I must
Jet
have.
A. Jet
and
A.
And then I would buy Dennis Rulo an EMAS system for each end of 1634.
Yeah, yes. We might be getting that anyway.
That would be nice.
Yeah, I think the government's going to do that.
Yeah, excellent. But no, I think that there would be something else. But okay, let's say we're going to splurge and opulence is bliss and so on and so forth. I'll start. I'd get a Global Express.
Wow.
Yep, I would.
If we're going to splurge that, even though I don't need it, actually, I would just go with like a G4.
G4?
G5, G4, something in there. That's all I need.
Yeah, well, that's not bad.
Yeah.
So, Rob, what would you have?
Actually, I just changed my mind. A Falcon 2000.
2000, nice.
Yeah.
Actually, I am very happy with my Zodiac. It's a two-seater.
Yeah.
It's a light sport. You can put 1,320 pounds into the air. The plane weighs and the plane weighs 851 pounds. That gives me a payload of 469 pounds between the pilot, the passenger, and the fuel. And since I weigh, with all my stuff, about 215 pounds, and then the reserve fuel, that means I could have between the passenger and the fuel 230 pounds.
All right.
And you want this black
fuel? Why? Because it's my airplane. It's my toy.
Yeah, it's special. It's
like my daughter with her stuffed animal, with her bunny. She wins $250 million. Do you want to replace your bunny, your stuffed animal? No, I love my bunny.
You'd have a lot of bunnies. She'd buy two bunnies, which would become a lot of bunnies.
So I'm happy with my airplane, and I'm happy with my wife. I've got everything that I need, and I've got you three guys as friends. What else is there in life?
Nothing. Yeah, no, there's not. Good for you. I mean, that's a way. I love the optimism in everything. That's perfect. That's what aviation needs. We need more of you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So, Mr. I keep saying Mr. and I should be Captain. I'd like to know about next week's show.
Next week's show. We got a great show. So, let's preface it by rewinding this by a half hour. So, I remember John saying that he would like to use more technologies in flight training.
I do.
Well, I think this is going to be a really cool new piece of flight technology for training. And that is we're going to have Keith Smith from the pilotedge.net. Dave Pasco from last week's show mentioned it.
Yep.
And I actually got to meet Keith on our flight to Teterboro that I talked about earlier. But we ended up having a great conversation. He showed me what he's doing with pilotedge.net. And it provides air traffic control services for Flight Simulator. And right before the show, you and I were picking up clearances from L.A. to Las Vegas and stuff like that.
And I have to tell the audience, it is amazing.
Yeah.
I kept on, how do they know? How is this doing pilot recognition? And you let me in on not so much of a secret. You're talking to live people.
Yeah.
Their job is to play the role of ATC on the other end.
Yeah.
While you're in Flight Simulator, and they're picking up the phones, listening over some internet connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is obviously real.
You want to hear what I did?
Yeah.
This sounds real. All right, ready?
Yeah, go for it.
Let me see if I pull this up here. Let's see what it sounds like.
That's the 906. Are you parking on the east or west side today?
Looks like I'm stuck in the mud.
The 906 here. Roger, we'll call ARC. We'll come get you out of there. Just hold your spot right there. Remain inside the aircraft, and they'll be right out for you.
Yeah.
We'll hold right here, 906 here.
And that's the 906 here. I'm just kidding.
That's awesome. We had that, and then we have a... let me see if I can find one more thing. How real this is. Let's see. Is this it?
Departure low, Baron 225, Sierra Lima 1000, climbing to 5,000 and Quang 5.
Baron 225, Sierra Lima, Santa Barbara departure, good evening, radar contact.
Departure, Baron 225, Sierra Lima is declaring an emergency. We have an engine failure, need to return back to Santa Barbara.
Baron 5, Sierra Lima, roger, turn left, heading 340, and do you have the airport in sight off your left wing?
Heading 340, we'll let you know in just a second.
Rolling out on that heading, the airport would be 10 o'clock and 4 miles.
That is so cool.
5 Sierra Lima has the airport in sight if you can roll the truck.
And 5 Sierra Lima, roger. You can make straight and approach runway 25, visual perch. And are you able to contact tower, or do you want to just stay on this frequency?
We'll go ahead and contact the tower, and everything's stabilized. We'll make straight in 25.
And 5 Sierra Lima, roger. Contact tower 119.7. Good luck.
19.7, thanks.
Yeah, good luck. How about that?
I assumed it was some technology that was automated, and yet, no. I mean, there's a guy talking to you
and
can make it as real as you want. I mean, you threw an emergency at him. You just wanted to land because you probably had to go do a relief stop or something.
Yeah, our passengers are showing up, to be honest.
Will Keith be in the studio, or will he be a telephone guest?
He will be another virtual guest, but on Skype. He sounds like he's right here, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he had an excellent connection tonight.
Yeah, very nice. And Keith is a great guy. We actually, it was funny because while we were at the restaurant in near Teterboro Airport in New Jersey, he brought his laptop out and was playing around. And here we are with me, my coworker Travis, and Keith are around his laptop giving air traffic control commands and, you know, verbiage and everything, you know, going back and forth. And all the tables that were in the surrounding area were looking at us, trying to figure out what we were doing. And we're making AvGeek fools of ourselves, but it was awesome.
Yeah, nothing better to do than hanging around an airport restaurant.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so it's going to be fun to talk to Keith and hear what he's up to and all the different ways that can enhance training and things like that. And it's going to be a really good show.
Excellent. You're welcome to stop by after tonight's show. Stop by with me at the north end of the airport and see the orange Zodiac.
All right. Well, hey, I might have to take you up on that.
All right.
I got to prepare for work in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's very good. But yeah, I think we got we had a great show tonight talking to John.
John Fiskus of the Flight Academy at theflightacademy.com. This is where it all starts with training and getting instructors that have the right attitude, that care and have passion about helping their students achieve their goals. That's what it's all about. And obviously, John has put that into his business, and his employees share that passion. So bravo for him and bravo for the industry.
Absolutely. Well, very good. Well, did you see what time it is in Zulu time?
Let's see.
Is it 0400?
It's coming up on it.
Yes, it is.
That's a rough time.
Again, just a quick one. What's your aviation week look like?
Aviation. I'm going to flight safety, so I'm going to get put through the ringer on emergency procedures. What about you?
Hoping to see a new airplane that may be new to the club, and certainly trying to think, grab a plane some night this week and just get up and fly.
Yeah, Rob. Hopefully you're a sport pilot. That's by right. The end of the week.
That's right. I'll see my CFI on Tuesday. I'll see Shanghai Bob on Thursday. And then I'll have my pilot's license.
Awesome. Can't wait to hear it.
Alex, who doesn't have his... Alex owns an airplane, a Cirrus, that's been in a rather extended annual, so he's hoping that it comes out of annual this week and he can go flying.
Yeah, awesome. Can't wait to hear about it.
Yep, next week we'll update everybody.
Yeah, very good. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Until next time.
It's Mark Eppner and Al Waterloo. I got your name right.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness.
And of course, blue skies.
And tailwinds.
See you later.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.